Richard Herring examines another object from all angles. This week, the wheelchair.
It's Richard Herring's objective, and please welcome Richard Herring.
Hello, I am Richard Herring, and it's my objective to look at controversial objects that have become the focus for prejudice or anger and see if I can change them with humour. Because when it comes to bigotry, it's important to take the P. Take the P out of preconceived, and you get reconceived. Take the P out of partisan, and you get artisan. And you can charge £3.50 for a loaf of bread. Take the P out of pride, you get a ride. It's brilliant. Take the P out of prejudice, you get an anagram of red juice. It's nicer, isn't it, than prejudice and red juice, which means if you're prejudiced, you've got red juice with P in it. No wonder the judgmental are screwing up their faces like they've tasted something brackish. Incidentally, you must never take the P out of Passover. Joining me, as always, someone who doesn't know her past from her pelbo, it's TV's Emma Kennedy! Yeah, Emma. Let's get on with it. Let's see what object we're going to be objective about this week.
I'm spasticus, I'm spasticus, I'm spasticus, artisticus. I'm nobbled on the cobbles, cos I hobble when I wobble. Swim!
The wheelchair.
That's right, a wheelchair. What could be more offensive than that? Look at this one, I've got it here, a chair with wheels. It's against God and nature. If God had wanted chairs with wheels, he would have made them like that, wouldn't he? But he didn't, he made them without wheels. Chairs are not meant to move around. Chair manufacturers must stop playing God, it's awful. All right, now, there isn't really anything wrong with the wheelchair, to be fair. It's a wonderful and useful invention. The modern-day version invented by Harry Jennings and Herbert Everest, who had broken his back in a mining accident. It provides mobility to millions of people. Does that really rank with the Hitler moustache or the gollywog in its ability to offend? Well, in a way, I think it does. It's an object that's benign and positive in function, but which our stupid minds manage to twist to prejudice. The wheelchair itself has this magical power to make the person sitting in it invisible. I suspect our audience here, I think they're more forward-thinking than that. But interestingly, there's a wheelchair here that's been on stage for the whole show. I bet most of our audience have only noticed the chair so far, haven't you? Look again, there is a person in that chair. A person called Simon Harris. Some of you still can't see him. That's like... Say hello to our blinkered audience, Simon. Simon, don't be shy, Simon. It's all right, speak up. Simon, where are you? I know you're in here somewhere. He's not here. He must have fallen out at some point. Have you seen Simon, Emma?
No, but he can't have gone far.
I'd better ring his mum and let him know what's happened.
Hello?
Hello, Mrs. Harris. It's Richard Herring from Radio 4 from this morning. Sorry, I've got a bit of bad news. I'm afraid we lost Simon.
What do you mean? He's still here.
What, I collected him from you this morning?
No, he was in the loo. You just took his wheelchair from the hallway.
Well, I sort of assumed he was in it, but I couldn't see him because of the whole invisibility thing he's got going on.
Disabled people aren't actually invisible, you know.
Aren't they? You never see him around, though, do you? So.
Well, didn't you think it was odd that he wasn't saying anything?
Disabled people can speak. Sorry for that language, bit wazzakist there. I don't want to offend any wazzaks listening at home. Sorry about that.
Simon's been really looking forward to being on the radio.
Yeah, I was, you wazzak.
He can still be on, just tell him to teleport in.
He can't teleport.
Not invisible, can't teleport. Is this guy actually disabled at all?
Yes, he is.
Well, look, I've seen all the films about disabled people, and most disabled people either have a superpower or a magic. Oh, no. Oh, is Simon one of the evil disabled people? he's more like Davros than Professor X, then.
No, he isn't. Leave us alone and give us our wheelchair back.
You wazzak!
Stop saying that. I'm not a wazzak. It's certainly true that a lot of disabled people you see in films are monstrous supervillains intent on wreaking their vengeance on the world. Most of the James Bond baddies, for example, could get a disabled parking badge if they wanted to. But surely no one genuinely believes that disabled people are evil in real life. Though, don't forget what England football manager Glenn Hoddle said in 1999.
You and I have been physically given two hands and two legs and half-decent brains. Some people have not been born like that for a reason. The karma is working from another lifetime. I've nothing to hide about that. It's not only people with disabilities. What you sow, you have to reap.
Sounds like Glenn Hoddle's been sowing some testicles there. Oh, no, Hoddle was, of course, sacked for that remark. I never believed in karma till that happened, ironically enough. The internet is always a good place to find out horrible opinions that are secretly lurking in people's fettered and selfish brains. When Kerry Burnell, a woman who was born with the lower part of one of her arms missing, got a job presenting on CBeebies, some people were disgusted. One person set up a Facebook group called...
Who is disturbed by the one-handed woman on CBeebies?
Someone even blogged.
Is it just me, or does anyone else think the new woman presenter on CBeebies may scare the kids because of her disability?
Unfortunately, it wasn't just them. Someone called Chiara's mum put this on a message board.
My daughter won't watch with the new presenters. She's only two and notices the lady's arm is gone. She thinks she's hurt every day.
Hello, Chiara's mum, if you're listening. I don't know, have you thought about maybe telling Chiara that the lady isn't hurt? That might allay those fears that I think you're clearly making up, because I don't think a child would equate a missing hand with pain unless you're doing some pretty awful things in your house. I don't think your daughter's going to be able to overcome the psychological trauma of being called Chiara, to be honest. That's what you should be more worried about. Despite adults projecting their own fears and prejudices onto their children and other people's children, it seems kids weren't that worried about it. Kerry herself said...
Children come up to me in the street every day and say, "What's that?" And I wouldn't say they're frightened, but certainly they're inquisitive. I'd always take the time to explain to a child. All they want is an explanation. They want to know, "What's that?" and "What's happened?" and "Why are you different?" And then they'll move on.
Almost like it's quite a good thing to introduce children to the concept of disability before they're old enough to leap to cruel judgment like their idiotic parents. But if you leave it later than CBeebies age, it might be too late. Anyone of my generation will remember Joey Deacon, a man with cerebral palsy who featured on the TV show Blue Peter in 1981, which is embarrassing for me because I now realise I was 13 or 14 years old when that was on, which makes my actions all the less defensible. The programme makers clearly hoped kids would learn about disabled people from Joey's inspirational life, but the main result was for every schoolyard in the land, Joey Deacon becoming the major insult. Anyone who did something idiotic was called a Joey. It's sort of darkly amusing that these good intentions of Blue Peter backfired, and it says a lot about us as adolescents and the way we kind of pick on the weaker people to hope that we won't be the ones that are bullied. But in fact, Joey Deacon lived an amazing life. I'm embarrassed in retrospect at my actions. If I could turn back time, I'd do things differently.
Joe A, Joe B, Joe C, Joe D, Joey! Richard, you're a Joey! Richard Herring is a Joey! You're Joey Deacon!
Well, actually, Joe Deacon is a man who, despite being unable to walk or communicate intelligibly, and who was considered mentally subnormal, was able to prove he was just as intelligent as anyone else, write a book, and led to the medical world to devise a new strategy by which intelligence could be assessed. So, I actually take you naming me after him as a massive compliment.
Joey!
Thank you.
Joey Deacon!
I thank you again.
Stop liking it! We're calling you a Joey!
And I am accepting that accolade. Thank you very much.
Balls to this! Let's just kick the crap out of him. Yay!
Of course, for the 21st century youngsters, if you call someone Joey, they will think you're comparing them to Matt LeBlanc from Friends. They'll be much more annoyed. But, whilst it's understandable for stupid schoolchildren to mock the weak, what is less understandable is when adults do it. The world of comedy, which is generally cautious about using racist or sexist language, seems to have few such qualms about carrying on playground taunts. I talked to stand-up comedy writer and MenCap volunteer Christina Martin about this.
How do you feel about comedians using disablest language? Is it something that you've noticed changing? And why are comedians less worried about that than, say, the racial words?
I'm not sure why they think that. But from what I can tell, the Hmong word and the retard word usually come out when they're not doing so well.
Right.
It's a really cheap and easy laugh. And everything else seems to be defended now by someone or some group.
There are comedians who will do jokes about everything, and I think you can cover any subject, including disability, but it's kind of interesting that they would use those words without thinking about them, whereas they wouldn't.
Yeah, they think about the N-word. There's no one cheerleading for the N-word to come back. I think it's the way you do anything.
There is lots of humour to be had from both living with disabilities and the way that people respond to them, as my next guest has proven over and over again. Will you please welcome the comedian Francesca Martinez, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, Francesca.
Hello.
So, you have cerebral palsy.
Yeah, but I hate that word.
Right.
I think it's so scary. It sounds like a Doctor Who villain. Cerebral palsy. So I rechristened myself Wobbly. Don't you think Wobbly is cool? And do you think that we should have more positive names for conditions? You know, like, instead of something really horrible like a schizophrenic, why don't we just say overly imaginative? Claustrophobic nature lover. And my favourite one is mentally retarded Sarah Palin.
You actually were on Kids TV, weren't you? You were in Grange Hill.
I was in Grange Hill. I was the Wobbly Girl, surprise.
So was there any kind of Joey Deacon reaction to that character?
No, bizarrely, in my real school life, the girls hated me. But in Grange Hill life, I was really happy, really popular. And that was the best thing about Grange Hill, actually. I got to miss school 9 months of the year legally. So I'm really happy, but stupid. Well, I've got to say, apparently I inspired you to drive.
You did inspire me to drive.
Because when I first met Richard years ago, I drove and he didn't. And I think he looked at me and went, bloody hell, what's she?
And so then you become a stand-up comedian, which a lot of people would think was a terrifying enough job anyway.
No, I absolutely love stand-up. We'll sit down. And I find comedy is really great to address subjects like disability, because people do tend to get their pants in a twist. And I enjoy challenging our notions of normality and disability, because I've never met a normal person. Have you?
I don't think so, no.
Are you normal?
I'm really
Richard?
Not normal.
I think difference is normal. And I think these words like disabled, able-bodied are so unhelpful. Like, surely you must have things that you can't do.
A lot of things I can't do.
Tell me one of them.
I can't do DIY, for example. I can't do anything with DIY.
Were you born like that, Richard?
I think I was, yeah.
Don't laugh. Serious. How do you cope?
I usually get and pay a man to come and
you
do it for
pay
me.
A man? Yeah. That is so resourceful. Wow! What about your parents? Were they not very good at DIY either?
I don't think my mum isn't. My dad was quite good at DIY, I think.
God,
so.
That's weird, isn't
yeah.
it? Bloody genes. Lovely, isn't it? And does that mean you can't have sex?
Yeah, I don't think it's connected, but
well done.
Thank you.
See, you're real inspiration. I think we've all learned something here today, haven't we?
Well, I could talk to you all night, and if I thought of this before, I wouldn't have bothered spending the last week writing a script. But I think we better go on and do the rest of the show.
Yeah, and I just want to say good luck with your DIY, and you're really brave.
Thank you. Thank you, Francesca Martinez. As with most of these subjects, people are confused about which words are acceptable nowadays. It's an ever-changing landscape. For my part, I'm more confused about how to refer to people who aren't disabled. I've been advised that the term was non-disabled, but that's a bit clunky, isn't it? And kind of a double negative. Yet, to call non-disabled people abled is also wrong. I don't feel barely competent in most levels. Maybe barely competent would do. I voiced my concerns to a disabled lady I met at a party, and she said,
"We call you the not-yet-disabled."
Which really made me laugh, but then it made me think, oh, my God, I genuinely hadn't thought of it like that before, and it's so completely true. One day, I will almost certainly be disabled as well, unless I'm lucky enough to be killed outright in an accident. That's how we all will be, either through an accident will disable us or through just the debilitation of growing old. But given the inevitability, isn't it astonishing that people care so little about this cause? In fact, charities report that there's an increasing resentment towards the disabled, a feeling that they've had enough done for them already, that we're wasting money on facilities that go unused, that disabled people are faking it for the benefits. People even seem to envy disabled people for these special privileges. Why do they get to park so close to the shops and not me? I mean, how badly do you want a parking badge? I'm prepared to disable you if you really want one. Now, do you think any disabled person's rubbing their hands saying,
"Well, thank God I ended up paralysed from the neck down. Look at all the extra room I get in this toilet."
And are there really enough facilities for disabled people? You know, are there enough disabled loos? I mean, you might think you see them everywhere, but, you know, there'll be a non-disabled person in there using them. We all do that. And just because you're going to be disabled in the future doesn't mean we're allowed to use the facilities now. I talked to Martin Sibley, a wheelchair user who co-edits an online magazine called Disability Horizons.
And how do you feel when you see non-disabled people using disabled toilets?
Oh, it's a difficult one. I mean, I think if there was a queue of non-disabled people at the disabled loo, that would be an issue. But if someone has snuck in personally, I let it go.
How would you feel if some non-disabled people were having sex in the disabled toilet?
It would be a difficult one to broach, yeah, to let them know that it wasn't right, but actually, good on you, mate, you know, you got your underwear.
Surely it should be a basic human right to be able to go to the loo in a pub, a place where you're meant to be drinking as much liquid as possible. There should be loos for everyone. No one should be allowed to miss out on those pub toilets, on the inch-deep puddles of dubious liquids, the missing toilet seats, the homophobic graffiti, and the non-existent or inefficient panoply of hand-drying equipment. Come on, landlords, do not rest until your disgusting facilities are available to us all. But it's no good if you can't even get to the pub in the first place. You'd think in London that the tube would be a disabled person's salvation, but if you go and look at the tube map, it is incredible how few stations have disabled access. If you're travelling from Hounslow West to Hounslow East, you're laughing, I'm telling you. Though you, if you're disabled, you won't be able to stop at Hounslow Central. But that's just where the shops and stuff are. Everyone knows it's the outskirts of Hounslow that people travel to Hounslow for, so I asked Martin about this.
You might get on at one place, but then you can't get off where you would actually need to.
I looked at, you could go from East Ham to West Ham was the journey I noticed, which is sort of three stops, which is useful if you live in East London. Do you find you spend a lot of time in West Ham?
Being a Tottenham fan, I try not to.
East Ham as well, though. I don't know what you're complaining about. You can go to West Ham, East Ham.
If I'm going to go out with some mates to a pub, yeah, it's less about the pub we like or the genre of music we might want to go into a pub that has. It's actually just as much about where can I get a tube or a bus practically without spending 2 hours to get home at the end of the night when you're already wasted, you know?
Sure. I mean, I think that's interesting about you saying that you want to go out and have a drink, because I think that a lot of people don't have that view of disabled people. They don't kind of imagine them as, you know, younger people or older people who would want to be going out.
The amount of times, you know, you've been in a pub and someone will pat you on the head and say, it's great to see you out. Yeah. And you sort of think, well, I've been out, you know, the last few weeks, actually.
And do you find people ask you questions? I mean, in the pub, I guess people get drunk as well, so they ask you stupid questions and...
Without the sort of pub scenario, people are a bit more blinkered and they don't like to confront disability, but like you say, have a drink, you're in a pub, next thing, does your knob work? Can you have sex, kind of thing? So, but if you get uppity and angry, it creates more of a divide. So I'm always wanting to educate, but in a more candid, jovial, friendly way, and I think... Humour is the best way to break down barriers, actually.
I suppose part of the problem that not yet disabled have with interacting with disabled people is knowing what level of assistance to give. You might want to be helpful, but you're worried about coming over as patronising. No one knows what are the rules in dealing with these issues. You know, the rules are the same as they are for interacting with anyone. If you politely ask if they need any assistance and they give you a grumpy response, then that's their problem, not yours, because disabled people can be dicks as well. They're just people. Obviously, you have to be careful not to say the wrong thing. If you see Abu Hamza struggling to open a tin of baked beans, you don't want to say,
do you need a hand? Don't!
Or if you stop to give Heather Mills a lift, don't say,
hop in! Don't! Oh, sorry, I've really put my foot in it. Don't!
Or if you're breaking up with Stevie Wonder, don't say,
sorry, I can't see you anymore. Don't!
It can be tricky. I know it's not always easy, and I've found this myself as well. I was at the swimming pool last year, and I was just going to have a shower. It was kind of a weird experience. I passed one of the other shower cubicles. There was a man showering with the door open, and he was showering facing outwards. He looked me in the eye with a fixed gaze as I went past, and let's say he seemed to be enjoying his shower quite a lot, more than was necessary. There wasn't anyone else around, and I got a bit freaked out by that. I was in the next cubicle wondering what might happen. When I came out of the shower, I was drying my trunks in that big salad spinner thing they have there. I was naked apart from my towel. When I heard a strange groaning noise coming up from behind me, I turned around a bit concerned. There was a different man lumbering towards me awkwardly, mumbling incoherently. Can you help me? He asked in a strained voice that might have signified arousal. I don't know. What do you want me to do? I asked. It turned out he wanted me to help him take off his trunks, which, after all that had been going on in my mind, was a bit of a strange thing to happen. I have motor neuron disease, he explained with difficulty. I can't do it myself. I mean, that's a lot to ask of a stranger, but if he's disabled and I'm a decent person, I should help him, right? But my immediate thought was, I don't know if I want to see this old man, I don't know, with no clothes on. I'd feel a bit awkward undressing him and touching his trunks. But I was also thinking, what if he isn't really disabled? What? What if he's pretending because he gets off on being undressed by an overweight middle-aged man in a towel? It could be that, you never know. I thought, what if I take his trunks down and then he says he can't shower himself either, or dry himself, or dress himself, or pleasure himself? I might never be able to escape. Really, the truth was I was just embarrassed. I didn't know what to do. I was a bit freaked out. I just mumbled no and kind of almost pushed him aside as I kind of hurried away, feeling guilty, thinking, if I hadn't been shaken up by that shower flasher, I would definitely have helped him. But I wouldn't have. Luckily, he found a better human being than me who did assist him, and I felt awful afterwards. Does that make me a bad person? When I go to heaven, I imagine Jesus will be waiting for me, saying,
"Hello, Richard. It's me, Jesus, from off of the Bible. Before you come into heaven, Rich, there's something I have to tell you. Do you remember the old man who wanted you to take down his swimming trunks?
Yeah.
Well, that was me.
You, Jesus? Why? Why?
I was testing you. When I needed a neighbour, were you there? Were you there?
Well, no, but...
I was cold, I was nearly naked. Were you there? Were you there?
Well, to be honest, I found that request a bit too much of an ask, Jesus. So it's a bit weird. You feel the need to go around disguised as old, unwell men in order to trick people.
Ah.
No, not ah. Stop saying ah, Jesus. Ah. No, hold on. Hold on. What about the man showering with the door open and facing the wrong way? Was that you as well?
No. I mean, the point is, you should always help the disabled, whatever they ask you to do.
No, you shouldn't. You didn't.
I cured the lame and the lepers.
Well, some of them. You could cure leprosy, and what, you cured maybe 11 lepers in the New Testament? Why didn't you cure them all? If I could cure leprosy, I'd cure all the lepers, not just some of them.
Ah.
No, stop saying that! I may have been cowardly in the showers of that swimming pool, and I didn't deal with it very well. I should have just said, I'm sorry, I'm not comfortable with that. Let me see if I can find a member of staff who will help you. It's okay to say no. Kudos to that guy, though, for not letting his disability stop him just getting out there, getting on with his life. I have to say, I think he has enormous balls, but I'm still glad I didn't get the chance to verify that personally. It's easy to see the disability and not the person, but we just have to make the effort to interact. This is Christina Martin again.
90% of Britons have never had a disabled person in their house for a social occasion. 40% of people who aren't disabled and don't have a disabled relative don't know any disabled people. So if nobody knows them, they just become this amorphous group, and it's really easy to make fun of that group. I'll give you an example, actually. A couple of weeks ago, I was on the train, and one of the kids from my volunteering group was on the train, and he doesn't have any speech. He just makes noises. And he was running up and down the train because he was excited that the train was going fast. And everyone in the carriage looked horrified, pulling their kids away. Mm. So I stood up and went, "Don't worry, he's just got learning disabilities. He's called Sam. He's really nice. He's just excited to be on the train. He won't hurt you." And everyone relaxed instantly. So it's just that lack of knowledge that can make you actually hostile.
She's right. You know, we have to overcome our fears and our prejudices and just interact with each other, and things will get better. We don't have to worry. In Christmas 2007, because I'd run the marathon for Scope, they invited me down to one of their schools to see the kids' Christmas plays. And I have to admit, I was nervous about that. I knew that many of these kids were severely disabled. I was worried I might say or do the wrong thing, worried that I might be embarrassed or sad or not be able to hide my shock. I was also sceptical that kids who are unable to speak or control their movements or both would be able to put on any kind of meaningful entertainment. I felt all those prejudices that I've mentioned, but with the assistance of the staff at the school and Stephen Hawking-style voice synthesizers, all of the kids took part. To begin with, I was a little bit unsettled. I saw the wheelchairs, I saw the disabilities, but before long, I began to see the children. Some of them were cheeky, some of them were shy, some of them missed their cues, others were playing to the crowd. It was just like at any other school play, except you could clearly see how much more being a part of this meant to them than it would to the children who take basic attributes such as speech and movement for granted. The moment that resonated most with me was when three kids of around 8 years old, with vastly varying degrees of mobility, came on dressed as Christmas trees and danced to the top loader song, Dancing in the Moonlight. It is isn't a song that I particularly like, and nor, I imagine, did the writer of the piece envisage that the people doing the dancing in the moonlight would be 8 years old, have cerebral palsy, or be dressed as Christmas trees. But the effort and joy that these kids put into the dance was an inspiration to me both as a performer and as a human being. It turned a catchy, though slightly vacuous pop song into something very deep and meaningful. I wished I'd written Dancing in the Moonlight just because it created this wondrous moment. Before, when I heard this song, I'd have thought of young women dancing around in revealing party clothes, drinking, taking drugs, about to commit lewd acts with the top load of band members. And I would have felt slightly soiled. But from now on, every time I hear it, I will think of those three tiny Christmas trees and remember what it actually means to be a human being. Like the members of Top Loader, I imagine, but I bet I'm right, I was living quite an empty and meaningless life at that point. Those little scamps reminded me I should make more of an effort and actually persuaded me to make changes in my life. We all have things we're unable to do and aren't very good at, and most of us choose to not do those things at all. But having the balls to do something difficult to the best of your abilities is better than being the best at it. Seeing children who had to struggle to form a word, delivering sentences of dialogue, was a lesson for both my chosen profession and my life. They changed the way I looked at myself, not because they were magic or had special supernatural powers, because they were normal. They were children. Forced to deal with unusual circumstances, but doing so better than I was at that point, despite my supposed abilities. What gets me is the short-sightedness of the not yet disabled, if that's not an offensive thing to say to anyone suffering from myopia. One day, you will be disabled. When that happens, you want to be treated with equality in a world where you can still get to the pub or go somewhere other than East Ham. You'll need the toilets and the parking spaces. You'll want to be seen as a person, not a disability. Purely out of selfishness, you should fight disabledism. You're just prejudiced against your future self. And your future self hates you and thinks you're a dick. I know. I've talked to them. They're furious with you. The wheelchair was designed by Everest and Jennings, a disabled man and a not yet disabled man, working together. They built it so it would be easier to see each other. So let's see each other and not the wheelchair. Let's reclaim it as a way to get together and work our way through this together. But I draw the line at pulling anyone's trunks down. Thank you very much for listening. Good evening.
You have been listening to Richard Herring's Objective, written by and starring Richard Herring, with Francesca Martinez and me, TV's Emma Kennedy. The producer was Tanisha Kalani.
And next week at the same time, Love It or Hate It, the Page 3 tabloids and its glam models are given the objective.